Jessica Marquardt, and welcome to Kaleidoscope, the Cortical Visual Impairment Podcast. There's a growing public health crisis that no one is talking about. Cortical visual impairment, CVI. It's the leading cause of pediatric visual impairment in the U.S. and the developed world. It accounts for about 30 to 40% of kids with a visual impairment. Yep, almost half the kids in our country with a visual impairment have CVI. And most people don't know anything about it. CVI is a brain-based visual impairment. This means that people with CVI can see what we see, but their brains can't interpret it. It is a disability of visual access. But spoiler alert, because CVI involves the brain and not the eye, we can harness neuroplasticity to improve vision. With intentional intervention to build connections in the brain, a child with CVI can see more. Our guest, Rachel Bennett, recently learned that her 5-year-old son, Henry, has CVI. And since changing her approach with him, his vision has improved. In fact, she says his whole being has improved. He used to freak out during car rides, screaming, moaning, kicking, and she never knew why. Now that she understands CVI, Rachel calls herself a radio parent. She narrates everything. Everything, describing items to Henry with salient visual features to help him interpret the details. It sounds like this. Henry, I see a school bus. Look out your window. I know it's a school bus because it's long, like a rectangle, and has wheels and one door. That door's in the front. It also has small clear windows on the side. And what color is a school bus? Yes, yellow. Rachel can now empathize with Henry. He's not getting the visual input that we all rely on. Imagine how frustrating. But armed with CVI knowledge, it's becoming less frustrating for everyone in the family. Rachel glows with energy and positivity. She's ready to take on the world. I'm so glad to introduce my friend to the podcast world. Rachel Bennett joins from her home in Maryland.
Rachel!
Jessica!
I can hear you.
It's so good to hear your voice.
I am so thankful to you for sticking through thick and thin, trying to figure out the technical details. You rock.
You rock. This is so cool. Everything that you're figuring out. I love it.
I do appreciate it. I wanted to tell you that last week after we got off the phone, Grace found me in my closet sound booth. Yeah. And she's like, what are you doing? What's on this stool? What's this microphone? And then I said, well, I was talking to my friend Rachel, and you won't believe it. She has the son named Henry, and he's 5 years old. And then I said, and he has CVI too. And you should have seen her face. Her face like kind of started to glow and the smile on her face grew and grew. And then she said, we're going to be really good friends, I think. We're really close in age. I just know we're going to be good friends. So I can't wait for them to meet.
I can't wait. Oh my God, I love that. I love that.
Tell us about Henry. Like, let's capture what he's like as a 5-year-old kid.
As a 5-year-old. He'll be 6 in September, which is crazy. So he is nonstop. He has loads and loads of energy. He's always ready for a dance party. He's always ready for hugs. He needs lots of hugs. He loves riding the bus. He loves going to school. He loves just running around. He's just constant.
What kind of music does he dance to?
Anything that we put on. You know, Wheels in the Bus was a favorite for a long time. He went through a Taylor Swift phase.
Nice.
Yeah. We've been listening to the ABC, like a rock and roll version. I don't know. Just random things.
So he's eclectic.
He's eclectic, yes, which I appreciate. And he likes to sing, too. Yeah, at school, he sings songs at the end of the day, and one of them is, hey, hey, like, hey, hey, what do you say? And he always just starts singing that out of the blue, and then starts laughing.
So he has a sense of humor,
he
too.
He does, and that just kind of started to blossom, you know, this past year, his sense of humor. Oh, look, he's walking in the room. Hey, Henry, we're talking about you. I'm talking to Jessica. Say hi, everybody. See?
Hi, Henry.
Hey, Henry.
Say hi, everybody.
All right, Henry, let's talk for a little while.
No.
And that's my husband, Carson. Henry, I'm going to talk to Jessica for a little while, and then we'll hang out later, okay?
Bye, sweet Henry. I love it. Perfect. We had a cameo appearance from Henry.
I know.
So what was he like as a baby? What were the earliest years of his life like, if you can remember?
Oh, absolutely. I can remember very well. You know, it was hard. First years of life were in survival mode. I mean, should I go into the whole story?
Yeah. Start at the beginning.
He was born. He was Breech. Both my babies were. anyway. And, you know, he's born like 2 or 3 weeks early, so nothing major there. But he was failure to thrive like right away, you know, just couldn't get enough. I started pumping exclusively and he still just couldn't get enough. And so he's like failure to thrive. He's in the zero percentile in weight for, I think, the first 2 years of life. We were considering a feeding tube for a while, but we never did it for whatever reason. And so that really dominated his first 2 years. And I remember it as, I mean, you know how with the first baby, you know, you just don't know, right? And yeah. I read all the books and I'm like, oh, he's not meeting any of these milestones. I'm just going to stop reading and it'll just be fine. And, you know, at his 6 month checkup, he hated being on his tummy, couldn't lift his head. And so people started to get worried. And then I started noticing that his eyes were shaking. And I thought, oh, all newborn eyes just must shake. It's hard for them to focus. They're newborns. And that's what really got us all started on this journey. We went to a pediatric ophthalmologist and I think he was 11 months at that point. And then we went to get an MRI and nothing really, nothing significant on the MRI, just that his head was smaller than usual. They use the word atrophy. It's like, oh. And then we went to see a neurologist. I remember the moment he walked in, she's like, oh, I see the dysmorphia. And, you know, you've seen pictures of Henry. He looks fine. So I don't know why people say these out loud to parents the first thing you walk in the door. Anyways.
It's funny now. I'm sure it didn't feel funny then.
What are you saying? Because, you know, it's just like, you know, once you start getting into the cycle of going to specialist after specialist, it gets so crushing, you know, the weight of it all. You just can't breathe. And so we were just kind of going to all these different people. We eventually went to NIH where we saw he's a genetic pediatric ophthalmologist, super specialized, and he's great. And, you know, we found that, you know, he has the nystagmus, that's the shaking of his eyes. He has pale, small optic nerves. And then so at that point, he was still about one. We're just trying to find if there was a genetic reason. So we went to Genesis here and there. And then when he was about 14 months, he had this stomach bug. You know, he just started throwing up and he already was zero percentile, right? He just couldn't get enough fluid. So he was hospitalized for about a week or so in the PICU. And it's just, then there was that. I'm just thinking about it. It was around Thanksgiving.
You were reflecting on the hospital visit around Thanksgiving?
Well, every Thanksgiving that kind of comes around like, oh, about, you know, 4 years ago or so.
Yeah, well, it's funny that you say that because this past Thanksgiving, I was reflecting on Grace's feeding difficulties and she was not ever diagnosed failure to thrive, but she did have a feeding tube.
Really?
But when she was first born, that first Thanksgiving, she was maybe 3 weeks old and I went home to see my parents and she wasn't nursing well. And my dear, dear sister was getting up in the middle of the night with me to help feed Grace. Aww. While I pumped, and I had mastitis on both sides.
Oh my God.
And then I remembered looking at my mom and saying, I'm just so angry at her. I'm so angry. And my mom said, well, she's a baby. You can't be angry at her. And I was still furious. You know, it was, there was maybe some postpartum depression there, but when your child doesn't eat and then is hospitalized for dehydration, because that's happened to us on numerous occasions. This is supposed to be, you know, you think feeding and taking in fluids is just this natural thing.
Right.
But it seems like for a lot of kids with cortical visual impairment, it's not.
No. And I felt the same way. I also had postpartum depression because it was so hard. You know, he wasn't sleeping. It was the days were really hard with him. And yeah, like there's this whole narrative around, you know, the beginning of motherhood, like, oh, it's just be natural and offer the breasts. And I don't know. It's just, there isn't one narrative about what motherhood should look like. So,
yeah. So keep going. Oh,
so we started thinking, then we went to an allergist and we found that he was allergic. I forgot, one of the first diagnoses he had was low muscle tone. And I guess when you have low muscle tone, it affects your intestines. And so somehow all of the proteins that shouldn't get out into the body get out, you know? And so we had all these allergies, dairy, wheat, nuts, everything. So I stopped eating everything because I was still pumping. And then we just stopped that and we just started, you know, he started eating solid foods like bananas and sweet potato, I think is all he ate for a little while. And he finally started gaining weight. So that was good. That was a big turnaround. And I think at one, he started receiving infants and toddler services for, you know, PT and speech because he started crawling when he was 14 months and then he didn't walk until he was 25 months. And I'm just thinking back on all the things. I'm like, we have this pattern rug and I just put a random toy. I'm like, go to the toy. And of course they didn't go to the toy because they didn't make sense of it or see it. And you just, the reflecting back and, you know, I don't think he ever looked at me. But again, as a new parent, you don't know what to expect. If I only knew what to expect, you know, I feel like he'd be in a different place right now.
Just because you've had a child, they're all unique.
Right. You never know.
So you can't beat yourself up over that. I think a lot of us who have diagnosis for cortical visual impairment that came later wonder, what if? But it wasn't that long ago that you got a diagnosis.
No, it was just a year ago or so. So leading up to that, we always knew he had vision issues. You know, never looked down. He tripped over things. He never looked at his food when he ate it. He never looked at me. And so we had vision specialists through our public school system. We had three of them. Nobody mentioned CVI. It just, you know, because he could see sometimes, he couldn't see sometimes. His ophthalmologist that we go to like every 6 months, because the teachers are saying he doesn't see, he doesn't use his vision, because he's part of a pre-K program at that point. And his ophthalmologist is like, you know, it's not vision. He just has serious behavioral issues. You need to deal with those. And I haven't yet gone back to this ophthalmologist after we found out he had CVI. I need to get up the courage, because I need to be on a good behavior. Anyway.
Yeah, forget Henry's behavior. Let's think about mine.
You do not want to be in a room alone with me. And, you know, even going to NIH, you know, to the National Eye Institute, we were there, we went three times and CVI wasn't mentioned at all. And at that point, he was making progress with speech. You know, he started walking. He never regressed, which we're grateful for. I'm really glad that his pre-K teacher, Miss Sharon, ignored my email saying, you know, his ophthalmologist says it's behavior, just need to focus on his behavior. And she called the vision office and to have one of the vision specialists come out and observe him. And after that, we have in our county here in Maryland, we have a vision pre-K class for kids who are 3 to 6. And it's kids with, you know, a whole range of who are blind or a whole range of visual impairments. And so about a year or so ago, he went into that class at the IEP meeting, his yearly IEP meeting, where we also decided to move him to the vision pre-K class. A TVI, who's also an O&M specialist, said, you know, your son has characteristics of CVI. And I'm like, what is that? I've never heard of that. And I later found out that she went to a training with Dr. Sandy Newcomb, who's one of the leading experts in CVI, who wrote her dissertation about the reliability of the CVI range. Here comes Henry again. Hi. And here comes his younger sister, Clara. Hi, guys.
Cute. Hi, kids.
Okay.
Henry, come on.
Thanks, babe. Sorry.
Let's pick up with, I think he has CVI.
I went and started reading about it and I'm like, okay. And then, you know, my summer got really busy with work and I just didn't quite dive in like I probably should have. And then I guess towards, you know, around August or so, I started to, and I went on Little Bear Seas was a good site, and, American Federation for the Blind, you know, had that page on CVI, which I realize now is a little outdated, needs to be updated. But it was a place where I went. And so there were all these fact sheets that I found and still nothing that talked about what it was like to, what he sees and how to teach him. And, you know, will this get better? Will it not? I bought, you know, Dutton's book, Vision in the Brain. And then I bought Dr. Roman's book and I just started reading both of them. And I sort of focused in on Dr. Roman's book because, you know, other moms have said this, like this book was on Henry. And it's the first time I've ever read anything that adequately described my son, because I just felt like he was this big mystery, not only vision, but all the other things. Because sidebar, you know, we got his exome tested. And another sidebar, I am so grateful, and it's not lost in me how privileged we are that our healthcare was able to cover all of this.
Yeah.
And he just had a variant in the ASTN1 gene, which they don't have much research on yet. And it's believed that this gene is responsible for sending neurons during fetal brain development.
Wow.
And so I think I see a strong correlation there between CVI and his other neurological issues.
Is there any understanding of how many children have that same genetic thing?
No, when there was not enough research on humans, our geneticist told us. So the research isn't conclusive or significant. But when I, of course, I Googled it online and a lot of things like Down syndrome came up, and other syndromes that are related to low muscle tone.
You know, when you got the CVI diagnosis, and the TVI was the first to you, I guess, to mention he has CVI. When those words came out of her mouth, there was still not a great understanding of what that meant or what the opportunities were until you started researching it yourself. That's if I understand correctly.
Right, right. Exactly.
When was the moment that you learned that his vision could improve?
When I read Dr. Roman's book. And when I read Dr. Roman's book and I learned about the range and I read about all the interventions and I completely looked at my house. I was like, oh my God, no wonder he's having meltdowns all the time.
So can you describe his first assessment on the range and then what you learned from that to maybe make some changes at home or with his routines?
We didn't get an assessment until past January. So that's what, how many months ago? 4 or 5 months ago, by Dr. Newcomb, because she's here in Maryland.
And she's CVI range endorsed.
Yes, she's CVI range endorsed. Yeah. So she, I guess I'm answering this question backwards, but when I read the report, it was, I felt the first accurate report of where my son is, you know, visually, in terms of developmentally wise, it was really great. And so she went to observe Henry in this vision pre-K class. And then she spoke with me over the phone for the interview. And it was really affirming to speak with her, because telling her this story here. And she's like, I just want to scream. I can't believe that. So the report, you know, just talking about different ways to accommodate and intervene to help him use color as an anchor and to help him, you know, help introduce more complexity and help him build those cognitive skills that his vision is acting as a barrier for. And so little things, incorporating his vision throughout the day. Like when I hand him something, he, you know, he's very tactile. He will not use his vision because he spent his whole life not using it. And so he's gotten really well with using his compensatory skills. His hearing is really great. His tactile approach to understanding the world is really strong. And so I just have to like move things around to help him. It just really helped me understand why he freaks out, why he has meltdowns all of a sudden, and what we need to do, bring him to a quiet room.
Do you have any great CVI meltdown stories?
Oh my God, so many, Jessica. Where do I start? Oh my God. So we were at this birthday party, and it was at this place with this bounce house, like Emporium place where all these bounce houses were and kids everywhere. And we went in to the birthday room and he just lost it because, you know, I had to sit still. He took everyone, all the kids' plates next to him with pizza on it and just threw them off the table. And then he jumped off the table. And they always happen, you know, in front of everybody. And then he starts hitting and screaming and kicking. It's still very like, he likes to hit and pull hair. So that's one example. I feel like that's so many examples.
But that's such a complex environment and it's novel.
Oh my God. Complex, novel, so many things going on. Yeah.
But it's hard because it's not like you would ever want to exclude your child from participating in those sorts of experiences. I guess what I've learned is that we'll do our best to prepare Grace for them and talk them through about what it might be like if we know it all. And then we'll try it and then know how to make a graceful exit.
Oh, yeah. I become a big fan of the Irish goodbye. Just leave. But that's good. I mean, do you go ahead of time? Do you go early before any of the kids get there? Do you come later once everybody's settled in?
Sometimes if it's a big event, maybe a neighborhood event or a community event, we'll try to go on the very early side, maybe even when they're setting it up, so that we can take a tour, walk around. It's not as loud, fewer people. And that has worked well. But one little difference, and it could go downhill. Like we're used to going to this festival in my in-laws' neighborhood. And so Grace is accustomed to it. It has bouncy houses. It's got the music pumping. And then they moved it to a different location for this one instance, and it was dark and everything was laid out differently and it was too much. We had to leave.
Wow.
So even though there were similarities between the two, the setting was novel and it was too much.
Too much. You just can't, the brain doesn't understand it. It just the thinking about the effort and energy that our kids need and use, you know, to make sense of the unfamiliar because they don't have those pathways yet. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that with neuroscience is kind of a hot topic these days. you know, more people understand the concept of neuroplasticity. It's written about more in these pop science type books, and in an accessible way. And so I'm thankful for that, because reading those sorts of accounts that aren't of CVI, but maybe of a stroke victim regaining ability, has really, really helped me. And it's such a hopeful message. You know, our kids' vision can improve and they can cope.
Absolutely. Right. And it's not too late.
So have you seen his vision improve?
Yeah. Little things here or there. I've seen him use it more and more. Like, we're able to do activities that incorporate vision without him, freaking out. And I feel like he's had fewer meltdowns since we've understood why, he has a meltdown, which has been huge. There's still a lot of things, though, that make me worry all the time. He just still doesn't like looking at 2D images, and the iPad is sort of yes or no, but he's good at avoiding. When he sees something that he knows is used for educational reasons, or that's going to be hard, he's really good at avoiding it. Reading books, he's still not into at all. So
you're very in tune to how he operates. I mean, that's important. I mean, I think we become these scientists on our own, kind of trying to research our children and with a ton of observation and maybe a tweak here and there to see
that's
what might
exactly
help.
It. And
you're the expert on Henry.
Yeah, you're the expert on Grace. I never thought I'd have that role in life. When I walk in, that I'm an expert in the room. I know it's about my son, but still.
And in many cases, do you feel like you're the expert on CVI when you walk in the room as well?
Yeah. Yes. I'm hesitating because, the vision office and people in the vision office, but they know about CVI. I don't know. They could be doing more. His current vision teacher, who's just phenomenal and wonderful. I've never seen a teacher truly individualize instruction like she does for all of her kids. She has 8 kids. Half of them have CVI. And she, as we know, university programs don't have coursework on CVI. Or if it is, it's just part of another class and it's kind of like a presentation. But she's learned a lot and she's trying all these new things, which is all, not all you can ask for, but it's a wonderful characteristic to have in a teacher.
Absolutely.
Who's willing and open to try all these interventions. So.
And interesting that half the kids have CVI.
I know. 2 of the 8 are braille readers and the other 2 have low vision issues. So. Half the kids, have CVI. And it's just going to continue, of course, as we know. When I found out it's the leading cause of visual impairment in kids, I'm like, what? How come nobody talked to me about this? How come no medical professional or the educational professionals that I've talked, that I've spoken with up until that point I heard about it, knew about it?
It's astonishing.
And it's still like, I still gasp about that almost on a daily basis. Like, what? How is this happening?
Our kids are trailblazers.
They are.
It's
really crazy. It's so exciting to be at the precipice of really a change in the visually impaired world. I feel like we're here at this moment. It's a really important moment.
What do you think kindergarten will be like for Henry?
So it's this fall. We just had his IEP meeting and it was a very different meeting. I hired an advocate who was wonderful. There's also a CVI range endorsed teacher that's working with Henry on the weekends, who's fairly local, and she helped write the IEP and she came to the meeting. So she was a CVI expert in the room. It's a CVI rich IEP, as Dr. Roman calls it, and I'm really grateful for it. And they were pretty responsive. I feel like I'm so grateful that I have had these experiences, because I know that's not the case for you and for other families around the country when it talks about trying to support their kids with CVI in the school system. And I wish my experience wasn't the anomaly at all. If y'all want to come to Maryland, we can take over.
Can we move in with you?
Sure, please. we'll get bunk beds. But, it took us a while to find a placement for him that we thought would be okay. Inclusion's not good for him. He's still, his developmental delays are still significant enough that he wouldn't be able to keep up with regular education. And then there was, some small special education classes, but, I wanted to find a teacher that was willing to try new things and knew how to think outside the box and do things differently. And so we found this program called LFI. I think it's Life Functional Skills. I don't know. But it's for kids who are non-diploma bound, but this early on, diploma bound students can still be there. So I was like, good, we need somebody to still build the foundational skills with Henry to get him to use his vision. I'm excited. I'm hopeful. We'll see. I think
that's really wise because the foundational skills are really, they are really important. Yeah. Having visual access to begin with is the foundation for being exactly. able to excel with your curriculum. And when they get into kindergarten, they jump into learning a lot of sight words. They're expected to pick up context clues, and often they use illustrations in books, which are often very odd-looking illustrations in children's books.
Right.
Really, they're so abstract. They don't look like the real world at all, which, of course, is incredibly difficult for our kiddos.
Right.
Keeping up can be hard if you don't have visual access.
No, you can't. You can't keep up. It's not fair, really. What's Grace's kindergarten experience been like?
She is in a general education setting. It's our neighborhood school right up the road. She's in a regular kindergarten classroom, but she does get services from her teacher of the visually impaired outside of the classroom so that they can be in a quieter, more controlled environment. Because as we know, a kindergarten classroom is incredibly complex, which makes it harder to process the lessons. And then the TVI also works with her in the classroom. She loves school so much. She plays it at home. She's the teacher at home, mind you. Yeah. a very firm teacher, I have to say.
So cute.
Discipline is her strong suit.
Good, Grace. Get everybody in line.
I heard you saying that Henry is really good at avoiding things when they're challenging. And I'd say, Grace, she's doing well, but she does the same thing. And last summer, before we had really infused CVI strategies into life and school, she was operating almost like she was blind. She loved her iPad, but she never looked at it.
Yeah.
She would turn her head
right.
toward it, and she was listening intently, but not using her vision at all. Fast forward, not even a year, and she does look at the iPad and in conjunction with listening to the sound. So, yeah.
Wow. That's huge because we know that the complexity is both, it's auditory, visual, you know, movement. So the fact that she's able to look and listen at the same time is a huge, huge deal.
Yeah. And I think it'll only get better.
What changed? Like, what made her look?
Well, we had to encourage her in multiple different ways. We were lucky over the summer to have our OT be able to visit Grace in her daycare setting 5 days a week. And the OT is so interested in CVI and took us up on classes through Perkins, who is doing such amazing things to educate.
Thank you, Perkins.
We love you. And so she's taken a ton of the Perkins CVI coursework. She was being mentored by a CVI range endorsed teacher of the visually impaired who is not local, but they would talk on the phone and collaborate over email to come up with what lessons they would do with Grace over the summer and how they would keep pushing it,
yeah.
pushing it further. Even sometimes the mentor would conduct a session over FaceTime while her OT was physically present so that she could learn a little bit about how this person who has a little more expertise would present things.
Oh.
And as a result of that, Grace's score on the CVI range did come up a bit, commensurate with what you would expect since it was such a short period of time.
Wow.
But we did see a measurable difference.
Wow. Just with such targeted interventions like that in a short period of time. The brain is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
There's people out there right now who are doubting the CVI range for whatever reason. And I don't know why. I can't understand why. But that's such a great example of when you have a normed assessment and you have a clear understanding of functional vision and you understand how to make targeted interventions to improve that functional vision.
That's the recipe.
It's the recipe. It's so simple. I mean, it's not simple. Mm-hmm. It's complex, of course.
It takes a lot of intention and hard work.
Yes.
But it can be done.
It can be done.
You've said that right now, you're the closest you've ever been to truly knowing your son.
Yeah.
And that's as a result of work by Dr. Roman and her
yes.
ability to research kids like ours and create mm-hmm. a tool where we could actually measure how they're using their vision and then come up with ways to intervene.
Yeah.
So when you say that, though, like, in what ways do you feel like you know him better?
Oh my God. I mean, I just, I'm pausing because it's just so wonderful. It's been such a wonderful experience. He still stumps me every day, of course. He still brings me to my knees. But knowing why, you know, reacts and behaves certain ways, I just feel like I know why he's anxious and I know why he's scared sometimes. And I know that timeouts don't work for him. You know, I know how to react to his behavior so it doesn't get us into a negative cycle. He reacts negatively. I react negatively. We just need to change the environment. We need to change what's happening. I know why he loves yellow buses because like yellow is preferred color and movement. And we do a lot of work with these shiny coins on a pattern background, and shiny is movement. And, you know, we use this black silicone mat during mealtime. It's not even a plate, but it's just like this black mat we put food on, and he's able to sit and eat for longer, and he doesn't throw his food as much. Mm-hmm. He still does sometimes. Trying to understand that he has this different normal, but he's still so joyful, even though he can be really hard. You know, the mornings are really hard with him for obviously many reasons. You know, transitions are rough. You know, and I know why he always needs to hold somebody's hand going downstairs, because he has a visual field loss. Mm-hmm. And why he always finds the railings. And why he, when we get to a new place or a playground, he walks the perimeter along for a good period of time just to kind of, I don't know, understand the lay of the land. Or it's just easy for him to just be outside of the action, you know. And I know how to teach him. I mean, I'm learning all these strategies, but I know that he's going to be able to learn how to read and write. I don't know when, but I know that I have the tools now. Knowing that means that I can be a better advocate for him. Knowing what are his major barriers to, you know, achieving academic success the way that our society defines academic success makes me better expert, better to advocate. But because before CVI, I didn't know how to talk about him to his educators. And I was like, what do you think? I don't know. But now there's like a direct path. There's a direct line. We'll continue to learn about him. We're definitely learning about his sensory issues. But I don't know if it's no CVI or if he does have a sensory processing disorder. But his OT, who's wonderful, is able to accommodate for that as well. It's the best place we've ever been with him. Even though it's still hard every day, it's the best place we're in. So
that's wonderful. And it is hard. You're busy. You work outside the home. You have two kids. You're learning as much as you can about CVI. I see you at conferences. I see you online. You've become a fierce CVI tiger mom and advocate. I mean, it's hard.
Oh, it's so great. It's a lot. It's a lot. But when you realize like how important it is and how like this is what you want to do, you know, like, okay, this is what I'm meant to do. It's the best feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, I never thought in a million years I'd be a champion for CVI. Never thought, but here we are.
You seem really energized and inspired by the opportunity, and I love it. I have to put in a plug for your amazing CVI timeline, which goes all the way back to 1987.
Yeah.
And outlines the history of the research in CVI and how it's developed. And anyone who wants to find it can find it at bit.ly/CVI timeline. That's bit.ly/CVI timeline. And it's a kind of a nice leave behind if you were to go talk to a politician or your school board or people on the educational team to help them understand that people have been working on understanding CVI for a long time. Now's the time to start acting on it.
Right. It's time. It's, you know, it's been a leading cause since the mid-90s, which also blew my mind. And I'm trying to understand why the medical and the educational fields have been slow to respond. And I don't know if it's because there needs to be more research. I don't know. But now parents, now CVI parents are ready to be heard.
That's right.
So that's good. We're here.
Do you find it stressful? And what do you do to decompress or take a time out from thinking about CVI? Because it can be all consuming.
It can be all consuming. And I'm feeling that a little bit right now, which is okay. But what do I do to unwind? That's so funny.
You're like, nothing.
I know, exactly. Like, go to bed early at like 8 o'clock instead of 9. You know, just watch like a show or like actually be able to read a novel, you know, for more than a minute at a time. But I do. I try to build like good habits. Like, I work out every morning. I wake up early and work out. And that's been my sanity saver.
Well, no wonder you have such a positive attitude. You have all these endorphins running through your body.
Oh my God, I know. You're so funny.
And what keeps you up at night?
Everything. Oh my God. Try not to cry. What keeps me up at night? That Henry has so far to go, you know, and that it's going to be constant. And will he be able to progress? And even if he gets to
phase three in the CVI range, you know, that's still going to be hard. And will he drive? No, he can't drive. Like, I just go through all of these things. And, you know, will he be with us his whole life? Will he be able to be independent? And I hope so. I think so. And it also keeps me up that, you know, things are going to be the same in 10, 15, 20 years that they are now in regards to the CVI landscape. And I don't think they will, but I also just want us to rethink education and how what we're learning about kids with CVI. There's so many kids who have a different normal. There's so many kids who have these neurological diversities, and how can we rethink how we include them in their educational and life? I don't know.
Right on.
A lot of things keep me up. But yeah. What keeps you up at night?
It's overwhelming, isn't it? Yeah. It's to me, it's just my mind. My mind gets turning. Like, how far behind might she get?
Right.
When will reading click? And, you know, we've also thought, how independent can she be? How soon? Mm-hmm. There are just so many unknowns. Yeah. I think that's the scary part.
That's what it is. You just don't know. You just don't know what the future will be like.
Well, there might be self-driving cars. So
that's what I'm banking on. That. Absolutely. I mean, we have the exponential growth of technology on our side. I mean, if you can, I'm trying to, who knows what it's going to be like in 20 years? You know, there might be some chip he can put in his brain and bam, he'll be able to interpret the world. I don't know.
Well, artificial intelligence.
Oh my God.
That has all sorts of avenues to explore.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you said that your hope for him is that he will be independent, and you think he will, but what are your other hopes?
That he finds a life where he's happy and he can live his life with ease. He has all the strategies and tools to make the world not so scary as a person with CVI. And that he'll be able to do what he loves. I don't know. He loves the washer and dryer. So maybe he'll own his own laundromat.
Maybe he'll do your laundry someday.
Oh my God, I can't wait. I'm hoping. Or, you know, that he just is happy and does what he loves. I also worry about, you know, when you get older and he realizes that he's different. He doesn't quite realize that yet, which I'm okay with, you know, because he's still developing in that sense. I don't know. He doesn't let that difference take him down. It's hard. You know, I think of your husband when he said that statement at a recent conference, you know, about how he was worried because Grace came home just with such low self-esteem.
Yep. She said, I don't like myself. And she's six. I mean, I don't remember having those types of thoughts until much older, but
right. Exactly.
She's thinking through, who am I?
Yeah.
And while that's really, really hard to hear, and we'll do everything to make her feel loved and a sense of belonging and supported at home, which I think can go a long way. I think that's a big part of the way that you make a child resilient. I think that she's just figuring out who she is and why she does have a visible difference. And I think we just spend a lot of time talking about, well, everyone's different. Everyone was made different. No two people are alike.
Right.
That's hard to come to terms with, especially when some people's differences are not so easily seen. I mean, Grace travels with a white cane, so it's obvious.
Right. It's good that she does. That's a really healthy perspective. I like how you handled that. That was nice. I'm going to do the same. I'm going to take that one.
Yeah. You know, it's such a physical game, parenting, when they're little, and then it becomes very mental.
Yes. That's so true. And then they become, you know, get in middle school and it's like, yes, that's so true.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell parents who are early on their journey knowing about CVI, kind of like you are, although you've gathered all the information so quickly, or anything else you'd like to say about Henry?
So if you're a parent and, you know, have a young kid and their vision's a mystery, just ask about CVI, go with your gut. You know, if you don't think it's behavior, if you don't think whatever they're saying, if the nystagmus or the small optic nerves, they don't account for your kid's behavior, just keep asking questions. And, you know, once you learn about CVI, buy Dr. Roman's book, because it is the one that has a clear educational approach for how to help your child improve. And I don't want this to sound like a plug. It's just I'm talking from my heart, you know, that she's the one who... Here we go. Here come the tears. She's the one who's going to help my child see. She's the one who's taught me how to be Henry's parent. She's the person who helped me know my son. Whatever the issue is in the educational, professional world about her and her work, I really feel that the parent voices and the parent experiences need to roar right now to show that her thinking and her foundational and pioneering work is what's going to help our children be their best selves.
Perfect.
Just keep going. Just keep going. Keep going. Oh, I can't swear.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
This is the best. The highlight to talk to you.
And in your words, high fives.
High fives. Always.
Perfect.
You're perfect. Yay. All right.
That was fun.
I first met Rachel in person at the Perkins School for the Blind's CVI Symposium. We'd spoken online and by phone in a forum of other parents of kids with CVI, but nothing beats face-to-face. We met up prior to the conference, and Rachel literally cried as each parent walked through the door, ready to learn more about CVI and to take on the world. Rachel and her family are in the early stages of their CVI journey, but I have to say, they travel fast. Rachel has accomplished so much since she heard the term CVI. The most important accomplishment? They incorporate vision into everything they do. Remember Henry's school bus obsession? Then you won't be surprised when I say yellow is his preferred color. Yellow motivates him to look and then act. Yellow toothbrush, yellow tape around the cubby, yellow backpack. Henry is freaking out a bit less when he's asked to use his vision. He's using his vision more functionally on his own for a few moments at a time. And this is impressive progress for Henry and for Rachel. Rachel and a group of other CVI moms are building a collective national movement to advocate for kids with CVI so that every child has the chance to make progress. We believe that children with cortical visual impairment have a right to visual access and educational and social inclusion. I bet you do too. Join the movement. Find Start Seeing CVI Advocacy on Facebook. Thanks, y'all.